All right, so the recorder is on. I may need to set in the middle. Once upon a time, we used to have so many people coming here. I don't know if you guys remember, we had a rule that people weren't allowed to talk during the teaching because the recording couldn't pick it up because we were so far apart. I'd hate to go back to that because I love hearing you guys talk, but I guess if you're going to talk, you're going to have to talk loud, or I'm going to have to run over to you with the recorder or something. We're going to do something because people listen to these and they miss the content more. In the smaller circle, it's easier to pick you up, but as we get in the bigger and bigger circles, it's harder and harder to hear your voices. So maybe we'll pass the iPad like you pass a mic or something. I don't know. We'll figure it out. But just be aware that there are a lot of people that listen to these recordings, and we need to try and capture whoever's speaking.
Speak up,
or maybe I will bring the iPad to you, maybe. You know, I guess it depends on whether you're going to do a long monologue or a short question.
I think we're short and sweet. Yes.
All right, so NTI 1 Corinthians chapter 13. The page number is... I'm having trouble. I have 302. What do you guys have? 302 in the paperback as well. All right, here we go. The reason for all things is love. Division is the opposite of love because division excludes. Love cannot exclude. Love is whole, knowing only truth. Become as an empty shell to know love. That is your reason. That is your true desire. To look on the world and divide it by judging is not love, and so it is not what you want. Lay down what you do not want and accept joyfully that which you do. Now, it's funny that this is in NTI because, because I've been fairly familiar with NTI for a lot of years now. But this actually came to me as a strong realization earlier this year. That's why I say it's funny. It's been here in NTI all the time. But, you know, when you get something as a direct experience realization, it's a lot different than reading it or even being the scribe of it, right? Because that's purely intellectual. But it came to me very strong earlier in the year this year that the way I worded it was love is emptiness. When you're absolutely empty, it's pure love. And it makes perfect sense because if you think about thinking or if you look at thinking, you'll notice that what thinking does is thinking automatically starts dividing things up. You know, I have a Sally and a Lynn, and Sally has these characteristics and Lynn has these characteristics, and I like these things about Sally, but I like these things about Lynn, and here's some things about Sally maybe, you know, should be different. Here's some things about Lynn that maybe, you know, all that starts coming with thinking, right? With emptiness, none of that exists. And so with emptiness, our natural essence, which is love, is fully present. And the only thing that gets in the way of that love is that thinking. So what occurred for me earlier this year was the word empty literally became completely synonymous with the word love in a very, very strong way. And I know that's true for other spiritual teachers too, because you'll hear them talk about emptiness with love. But the students who haven't realized it yet get very scared of that word, right? Because empty sounds, what's it sound like? I've lost what it used to sound like to me.
Sounds like empty.
Sounds like, yeah.
Nihilism?
What's nihilism mean? That's a nice word.
Well, I'm not even sure I'm pronouncing it correctly, but it's...
Nihilism. I've seen it written, yes.
The Buddhists said when they talk about emptiness... The suffix N-E-S-S refers to having the quality of being empty. So the ness refers to empty as being not there, but having the quality of being empty. Nihilism would be 100% empty, but vacuum, like, I guess.
Yeah.
So
lacking, absence of being, lacking would be the nihilism, the lacking, yeah. And instead, I would also say another word that for me is now completely synonymous with emptiness is openness, freedom, love. These words are completely synonymous for me, completely now, and they weren't prior to this realization earlier in the year. So it's funny that it should be right here in NTI all the whole time. And it was right here the whole time. Moving on, verses 8 to 12. When you look on the world, you see the reflection of your mind, which makes the world through thought. What you believe and what you accept, and this means accept as true, is seen in the world. There is division in what you see because there is division in your thought. This thought is not love. This thought is the denial of love, which is all that truly exists, which I just demonstrated for you. You know, as soon as I think, oh, I have a Sally and I have a Lynn and blah, 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 you know, I'm filling myself up with division thoughts, right? To cease denial and see truth, which you truly desire, become as an empty shell. Let go of thoughts of division that you may see the beauty of your oneness face to face and you may rejoice. Trust is the means and love is the reason. Give everything to trust in the Holy Spirit because love is all that you desire. And for me, that bottom italics part is pretty important because I'm assuming that everybody's the same as me in that we value our thinking very much, not a little, very much. And so what we're really being asked to give up here is the one thing we value most of all. We may think we value our families or our money or our space or whatever, but what we really value is our thinking, the way we think. That's what we love the most. And that's exactly what we're being asked to give up. And so the only way that you can start to give up what you love the most and actually even trust the most is to trust something else more. And in this case, we're being asked to trust the Holy Spirit. Trust the Holy Spirit when the Holy Spirit says, give up your thinking and you will know love. And you will be blissfully happy because that's all you ever wanted, right? And if we can trust that, really trust it, then we'll start giving up thinking in areas where we would not have given up thinking before, right? So trust is the means and love is the reason. So let's move on to NTI 1 Corinthians chapter 14. Do not wish for gifts that are not yours, for everything is yours. To wish for something that you believe you do not have is to believe that you are an illusion of yourself. Lay down your wishing and your partial definition of who you are. Be open to receive the truth. So you talked about Buddhism a moment ago. This would be like the Buddhist teaching to let go of desires. That's really what, even though it's not using that same word, this is the same teaching, to wish for what you do not have. That's to desire, right? And it's saying that whenever you desire, you are believing that you are, what's the words it used? I love the way it worded it, that you are an illusion of yourself. You're believing that you're an illusion of yourself, a partial definition of who you are. Again, the truth is that what we are is love and happiness and freedom. It's not, you know, and we think we want love and happiness and freedom. And so we desire things. Because we think when we get that thing or that circumstance, that situation, then we will have, you know, love or freedom or what was the other one I said? Happiness, right? So in the act of desiring, we're denying what we are because we're thinking we have to gain it from somewhere else. We're totally denying ourselves in the act of desiring. And what we want to realize is that we are love. We are happiness. We are freedom. And every desire that we have is a block to that realization because it says, I have to get it from something. I have to get it from something. And, you know, I've had people say to me before, you know, someone who was really attached to their desires, like I used to know one woman who really believed strongly that if she could just find the perfect mate, you know, she would be happy. And it's funny because this particular person had gone her whole life without ever being able to satisfy that. Some people have a really good mate for a time. Here's someone right here. This person had gone her whole life and had really hadn't. She's now, you know, in her 70s and she's still trying to satisfy this desire. She feels like this is the reason she's been unhappy. And so I tried talking to her and helping her see that actually her desire for a mate was making her unhappy. You know, she was always worrying about it, always trying to find someone, you know, getting on all these dating sites and ended up with all these people who weren't respecting her and weren't loving her. And, you know, the one thing she thought would make her happy was actually the greatest cause of her unhappiness. And if she could have let go of one idea, she might not have been awakened, maybe she would have, but she would have been significantly happier with her present life if she could have let go of just one idea. So it's funny, we think, I desire this, because if I get it, I'll be happy. If I'll get it, I'll be happy. And what we're not noticing is the whole time we're desiring it, we are unhappy in the act of desiring what we do not have, what is not just naturally being given by the universe.
And we always desire what we don't have.
Yes.
I mean, otherwise we wouldn't desire it.
Right.
And so it's the whole idea that I don't have everything I need that makes us unstable, unhappy, and it causes you to suffer.
Verses 6 to 12. You are the Son of God. You do not see yourself in this way because you choose to see yourself in other ways. The other definitions that you choose are chosen by you as a mask of who you would like to be. But a mask covers that which you are. In living out your roles as you have chosen them to be, you have forgotten the truth that is under the mask. I remember, because when I was the scribe of NTI, I didn't have any, I hadn't had any of these realizations yet, right? So at one level, I did not understand any of this information that I was writing down, which is kind of interesting. And I remember very much these next two sentences really stood out to me. It says, surely the one under the mask is the creator of everything that makes up the mask. Surely the one who made the mask is beyond the mask that he made. That made perfect sense to me. That was the first time, I think, that I began to realize at some level. I mean, it was only an inkling of a level, but still there was something real in that inkling. I began to realize I couldn't possibly be Regina. Right? Because a mask cannot make itself. It can't. It needs a maker, right? And I realized that I knew that I had to be the maker of the Regina mask. I knew that I had to. So this was the first time, maybe only a little inkling, but the first time I began to really step back from the full belief that I am Regina. Right? And the thing that's kind of been fun since then is with Jasmine, watching her, you know, as she grows up and watching her build her mask, watching her pick out pieces and say, oh, I'm that. When, you know, I've known her for a long time. She's not that, you know. But I watch her at it. And, you know, so you watch the ego build the mask, right? And so something is there before the mask is built. It's got to be because the mask is on top of something. So what is it that the mask is on top of? What, you know, what's there first? Sentence 7. You who limit yourself to the mask limit one who is unlimited, and you do this by your own choice. lay down the mask. Lay down the roles and concepts that tell you who you are. Realize that you have forgotten everything beyond the mask that you have held to. Become as an empty shell without any part of the mask held for security. Release all of it that I may fill you with the memory of who you are. Well, I'll tell you what this is reminding me of, and I hate to say it because three people are in the room that's going to be taking this other class from me. But what this reminds me of is the very first module in that class talks about the question, who am I? Who am I is a question that seems to always be running in the background, almost like it's unconscious. Who am I? Who am I? And what happens throughout our primarily growing up period, but then even through our continuing period, is we're constantly grasping for answers to that question, who am I? And as we grab on to answers, we say, oh, I'm that, you know? And there's all kinds of answers, no telling. It would be fun if we could, like, dissect our who am I DNA and look at all the answers we've adopted. I mean, we have ideas about, you know, I'm nice, I'm charitable, you know, I'm a bitch, I'm, you know, I'm fat, I'm, you know, attractive, I'm shy, and then we have the roles, you know, I'm a mother, I'm a student, I'm, you know, whatever. You know, I mean, there are so, I probably couldn't even sit here and begin to imagine how many answers to that question we have accepted as fact about who we are in this lifetime. And this program, Who Am I, it just runs all the time. Even now, we're still adopting answers. In fact, today I was laughing because I can't remember why, something in the work I was doing, I was reading bylaws and stuff, and, you know, something in the work I was doing, I came across the idea that, you know, that I'm a minister. And I just started laughing because although I see that role, for some reason I never adopted that into my mask. And so because I never adopted the idea I'm a minister into my mask, whenever I see it, it still makes me chuckle. It's like, oh, that's so funny. Because it isn't a part of my identity, right, even though it's a role I feel. But had I not probably been on this spiritual path and been so conscious of that who am I searching, I would have adopted it. You know what I mean? I would be a minister now. That would be a part of who I am. So, you know, little changes in our life and we adopt a new piece of the mask and we're always, always adding to the mask. So a part of what we need to do is lay down the mask. We need to start reversing that process. And this is where the question, who am I, comes in again. Now, instead of the unconscious, who am I, running, which is always adding to the mask, you start asking the question, who am I, consciously, with awareness. And as you start asking the question, who am I, consciously, you start seeing all these little things that pop up that answer the question. But now you start to deny them. You say, wait a minute, that's not who I am, you know? And that way you're starting to take the mask apart again. You're starting to lay down the mask. So it's kind of funny that the question, who am I, is what builds the ego, and the question, who am I, is what undoes the ego, right? Just one is conscious and one is unconscious.
Well, the other thing is that there's also the question, who do I want to be? And I find myself, not as much as I used to, I used to have all sorts of ideas of what I'm going to be when I grow up, who I'm going to be. When I reach this point, this is what's going to be happening with me. This is how I'm going to look and act, and people are going to think of me this way. And I mean, this is something we actively do, is we're actively building that mask all the time by putting out into the future what we expect ourselves to be. I'm going to be enlightened. I'm going to be enlightened. When I'm going to be enlightened, I'm going to wear a certain kind of clothes, and I'm going to wear my hair a certain way, and I'm going to talk a certain way, and people are going to look at me a certain way. And I mean, really, you build up these ideas in your mind, and then you never stop to ask the question, is that what I am? Because what I am has nothing to do with any of that stuff.
Right.
And so just for me to just stop saying, thinking a future of me being some different kind of person.
Yeah, in fact, that's what that's what who do I want to be is. It's a future projection of the who am I, right? Yeah. So, all right. So verses 13 to 17. You do not know who you are. This is true enough. Only you do not know it is true if you are insisting on clinging to your mask. The heart knows you are not the many faces of the mask that you wear. The heart knows you are beyond the mask. Yet the heart cannot know what the mind does not know. The heart can only know there is more, and then call to the mind to seek that which the heart feels. But if the mind answers the heart with belief in the mask, the heart knows it has not been answered. So, the word heart is obviously a symbol. And the way the word heart is being used here, I don't even know what word to put on it. It would not be Holy Spirit. It would be that stirring in you that causes you to be on a spiritual path. That's the heart. That stirring, that point of the heart, maybe that's the entry point into the deeper heart, right? But that stirring at that level of the heart, it doesn't actually have the answer. It only asks the question. And it knows when an answer is provided that is not the answer, right? And until an answer is provided that's pointing in the right direction, it just keeps stirring. Lots of people experience this throughout life when they get that college degree, then I'll be happy. Then they get that job, then I'll be happy. Then they get married, then I'll be happy. And they get kids, then I'll be happy. And they keep thinking, this is the answer to that stirring, that stirring that wants to know who I am. But with every achievement, there's just this feeling of, there's still the stirring. I got to keep looking. I got to keep looking. I got to keep trying. And what they don't realize is the answer is to let go of all of that building of the mask, right? To let go of adding to who I am. The answer is in the opposite direction. The answer is in letting go of all of these ideas about who I am and getting back down to nothing or emptiness as a definition. And when you get down to nothing or emptiness as a definition, you get back down to is. I often use the word isness. You get back down to is without defining anything on top of it. Then you realize who you are. So every definition that we add covers up who we are. Every definition that we let go of brings us back closer to who we are. So that stirring just keeps continuing as long as we're giving it wrong answers. The stirring's like, no, that's not it. And that's why the seeking continues. Because the stirring won't stop. It hasn't received the right answer yet. Listen to the calling of the heart. Lay down all belief in the mask. At the heart's true pleading, become as an empty shell, that you may be filled with the true answer that satisfies the question of the heart. Your mask is like a block to your truth. As you hold the mask up firmly, claiming it is what you are, that which is your truth is firmly hidden by you. Look carefully at what you do. Is this truly what you want to do? Do you wish to insist that you are what you are not? Can a mask, even though it is insisted upon, become truth? For me, that was another good question. Like, some of these questions really helped me open up a little bit. They were like cracks in the shell, cracks in the mask. And that was a good question. I may insist this is true about me. I may insist I'm a really nice person, or I may insist, I'm a bitch, or I may insist I'm absent-minded, or I may insist I'm really smart, right? But does it make it true? Now, all it does is keep me from knowing the truth about what I am. It is your truth that shines for all to see and recognize, not your mask. For masks are limits, and limits are not real. No one looks upon limits and feels freed. Remove the mask. Let truth be known that it may extend through you. This way, your brother recognizes the tight fit of his own mask, and he also seeks to be freed of limits. So that's a nice little point too. As I release my mask and I become free and I become naturally happy, not dependent on circumstances, then my brothers start to see this, and that starts causing them to pay attention to the stirring in them in a different way. It helps them to make a decision to start laying down their own mask. So my freedom is a part of the chain of total freedom, right? Lay down all limits that you have taken upon yourself. I did not give you any of them. They are not of me. They are not of your truth. They are of the mask, by the mask, and for the mask. Therefore, they can only limit the mask. By laying down the mask, you lay down limits also. So that's our reading. And I think that probably a really good assignment, which you guys are going to be doing anyway, so might as well do it. A really good assignment might be to start noticing your answers. I'm not talking about your spiritual answers. I'm talking about your ego answers, your answers to who am I. Start noticing during the week when a thought comes up that's defining you for yourself. Just notice them. Start paying attention, because there's a whole lot of definitions happening every day that you may not be aware of that are flying by in your thoughts. You know, how often is your mind saying, oh, I'm smart. Oh, I'm dumb. Oh, I'm kind. Oh, I'm selfish. You know, how often is your mind defining you? And just start paying attention to this mask that you're carrying around that you might not be aware of. So pay attention to the, that we're semi-unconscious, now they'll be coming out of unconsciousness, semi-unconscious answers that go on in you all the time to the answer to the question, who am I? And what I'll do is stop the recorder, and then we'll do a little bit of silence.